The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look at everything that has happened in the world of women's football over the last week or so. Joining me to look back on Champions League, Europa Cup and of course the WSL, we have Karen Duggan. Karen, how are things?
Things are good, Kathleen. Thank you very much.
That's good. We had some exciting news for the podcast with our one and only Scarlett Heron joining Hibernian. And I was chatting to her earlier. She will be back in a few weeks, but we're just giving her some time to, you know, chill, adjust to her new life. And she was telling me that she's playing Inter Milan and Celtic this week. So I was like, that's a bit of a switch up compared to an average week.
Yeah, it's very different to my 9 to 5 and looking forward to Sligo at the weekend. But look, it's a great move for Scarlett. She's joining with Jess Fitzpatrick, obviously from Piemont, which is always helpful, you know, going with someone that you know, similar age, you have that settling in period together, which is great. And they both got game time at the weekend, which we love to see. I think it's a really good move for both of them. Hibs, obviously current champions, playing against the teams that you want to be playing against. I think they'll probably be thereabouts in the top of the Scottish League again this year. So really good early experience for both of the girls to be getting.
Yeah, no, so there was other good news for a former friend of the podcast, Jamie Finn, getting 90 minutes under her belt as well after her ACL injury. So hopefully things are looking bright for the Irish talent across the water, and long may it continue. But we did have a bit of European action at home last week, and we talked a little bit about it on the podcast, and that was Athlone versus Glasgow in the first ever Europa Cup for the women. And if you want to follow more about the second tie for that, Eve Conway will be there for Off the Ball this week, so there will be interviews and stuff across the board there. But it was a disappointing, I think the scoreline potentially doesn't fully reflect what the game actually was for Athlone, because there were periods where they had like a little bit of dominance. They just kind of didn't have, I suppose, that level of class that Glasgow have.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just clinical from Glasgow. I don't think they like outperformed them, but in the key moments they were a little bit more ruthless, probably. Again, they were at home, they were experienced, and, you know, they got into the game. They got a goal probably against the run of play, and they got it nice and early. They got it 15 minutes. And for Athlone, you know, it's a huge game. You're away from home. You want to keep it tight for at least the first half, if possible. So 15 minutes in, you're kind of chasing then, and then 10 minutes after halftime and 5 minutes after that. It was just the timings of the goals when they did have some nice periods. I have to say for Glasgow, I thought Mata on the right wing, I thought she was brilliant. And sometimes when you have someone with just pace, there's nothing you can do about it. I've spoken about it before. You know, when you're a fullback, sometimes you are going to get beaten. And that's when it's up to your covering winger or your covering centre back to do it. And it's probably not something that Athlone have had to do in our league to that extent. They probably didn't have to cover those spaces as quickly and weren't used to kind of giving up the central areas to go and do that. So big lessons learned there. But like I said, they can take a lot from the performance, but it's going to be hard to come back from that at home, not because there's a huge gulf in talent, but because I think Glasgow probably have the nous and the experience to not give up 3 goals on without response.
Yeah, I think if they had managed to get 1 goal across the line, you would feel a little bit more confident, because a 2-0 win doesn't feel as hard as, you know, trying to get the 4 goals that they will need for this stage. And you are right about Mata, but then also you do have like a couple of full-time internationals on that Glasgow squad, you know, like she's one, Maltalo who scored, she's a South African international. They definitely just do have maybe that like step above than what Athlone have. And the fact that
quantity of players playing at that level, as opposed to, you know, there being a huge gulf in the talents, just like you say, experience. Now, Athlone have a few girls who aren't far off full time as well, and that's why they are in the position that they are. They're a very strong squad. So, look, I think they can definitely get a result at home, but yeah, it's going to be very difficult to put three past that Glasgow team, you'd imagine. But also, if we're looking at plus sides, Erin McLaughlin obviously started only her second game. She had only played the week before, obviously scored, made an impression, kept her place, and did really well for Glasgow. So we're not all doom and gloom at this point.
No, definitely not. And that was brilliant to see. And I'd love to know how these Athlone players in maybe, like, I don't know, 6 months' time will reflect on this whole period, because obviously there was FAI Cup semi-finals as well. They went ahead against Shamrock Rovers in the... Or they won, sorry, against Shamrock Rovers, and they went, like, 4 points clear at the top of the league. Like, they've just had a mad couple of weeks. And I don't know, when you're in the middle of it, do you really appreciate, you know, playing Champions League football, cup football, league football, and doing like relatively well in all of them, and your manager departing in the middle of all that as well?
No, you can't, because you are chasing the next thing, and they were straight onto the next thing, which is grand now. And I think, you know, they've bows in the cup final. They can park that now for a while. Shells are not going away in terms of the league. So Athlone really do have to be on it for the last four games. So yeah, they won't have a time to, you know, really reflect on it. It's been an amazing season, but if they don't concentrate for the last five games, it could all really kind of amount to nothing. So it's a huge few weeks for them, in terms of them stamping their authority on kind of the landscape of Irish league now, because do it once is good, but if you do it 2 years in a row, it's very, very good, and it's kind of a warning shot at a lot of other clubs if they can manage to do the double this year.
Also in Europe, your beloved Manchester United had a difficult start to their aim of getting into the Champions League draw. They lost 1-0 to Bran in a game where, like, they had all the chances. I really do not know how they didn't score two or three goals in this game. And there was a bit of controversy before the game, because some of the players' boots have just went missing. Still haven't been found, apparently, but in a turn up for the books, apparently United did actually source some replacement ones very, very quickly. So whatever happened, happened. But a disappointing result, even though it was in front of a record crowd for a game in Norway.
Yeah, the crowd was amazing. It was class to look at. And like you say, Man United were very dominant, but maybe when they just didn't take those first half chances. Turland again, who had been really good, she had a couple of headed chances which we would expect her to take, and then just kind of left Bran into the game a little bit, gave them moments. They had some fleeting moments. Ella Toon should have scored as well, you know, things that went right for them this week and last week in the WSL didn't go right for them away from home, in the Champions League. So you'd imagine now Bran will go even more defensive in the return leg. But based on what they've seen, they should still be favourites to go and get a result at home. But yeah, it was disappointing. I'm sure they would have preferred to be going back with a little bit of the comfort of at least a draw.
Yeah.
But a loss is very worrying, you know, at this point.
I think as well, the fact that they were so in it for so long and they looked so on top of things, easily had like at least 2 to 3 chances that should have been scored. That kind of makes it a bit more worrying. But then I suppose you look at how they're doing in the league, you know, they're top of the league. They have the top goal scorer in the league at the moment. They had like a brilliant win against London City a couple of days later. So, you know, apples and oranges, you take what you can with these things and just hope that you can do it at home.
But Man United need this. Man United do need to get into the Champions League, you know, they do. If they're to push on, the vibes look like they're good despite things like the boots happening, the controversy around the flights. They need this to be the story as opposed to all those little things, because we know all those little things aren't going to improve based on the lack of support they're going to get. So it really is on their shoulders to keep pushing this team forward as, you know, a team to be reckoned with, to be spoken about in the same conversations as Arsenal and Chelsea. And Man City.
Based on the small matter of who the owner of the club is and how little attention he pays to the women's team in general. Okay, we will move on and we will look at some of the fixtures from the weekend. So we'll go to Arsenal West Ham first, just because it was one of the first games of the weekend and not because of my internal bias at all. Slightly concerning that it's the
Friday
second
Night Lights.
Exactly. Slightly concerning that it's the second week in a row that Arsenal have had to come from behind.
A little bit, but I mean, it was just a howler of a mistake by the goalkeeper.
It was actually
it's
like
not a characteristic howler. That's the reason I said Friday Night Lights. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt on the floodlights and something getting in her eyes. We're not used to seeing that from Van Domselaar. And after that, I mean, it was a professional performance by Arsenal. Mead, you know, she's really... She got her a couple of assists when she came on last week. She got another assist to make it 1-1 with Manham. She, after all the talk about her in the transfer window potentially going to Lionesses, is looking like someone who is going to take her role with the team, whatever that is, at face value and run with it and put in performances. So that's obviously a really positive. Thought that Kim Little was very, very good. And Russo, again, for me, was player of the match. And it is just her, like, incessant running down those channels. And she got the two goals in the 90th and 95th minute. But the first goal that gets them back in it, it's Russo running the channels and linking the play. And she gets it into Mead. And then she slips it through to Manham, who is making those forwards runs. And Manham had space. I don't think they're at much, unfortunately. They're the team that we keep waiting to get better. And they didn't show that for me against Arsenal. Now, I do think Arsenal are very, very good. Obviously, you were mentioning slow starts, perhaps, and that's something that they'll have to address. But they do address it. Like, they did make changes at halftime. You know, Blackstenius came on at halftime and scored within, 6 minutes? So,
well, that's what I found kind of interesting.
I don't have much negative to say about Arsenal.
Yeah, whenever Blackstenius came on, Russo kind of dropped into, like, a deeper position. And it's going to be interesting to see, will they start starting her in that position a little bit more, because it did give her a bit more freedom. And when you have the options of, like, Blackstenius that probably doesn't suit that sort of role in the same way, that could be a partnership that we see develop a little bit more during the season. And I know Sleggers was talking about it post-match, saying it's something that they've been really practicing in the training fields with Russo, and kind of having her more in that 10 role and as a position that she can, I suppose, grow into a little bit more over the course of a season and get the goals.
Yeah, she has the abilities to do it. I still think that she has a knack for finding goal, and Blackstenius is always a brilliant super sub option. But there's always a question, can they play together? I absolutely think they can. Both senior international footballers, and it's the same with Man City when they were talking about, can Shaw and Miedema play together? But we know Miedema can drop deep, and she can play in that nine role if she wants to. So Russo's so willing, you know, to adapt and to run and to do whatever is needed. And she's so good at bringing other players into the game. It would be a natural transition for her to go into the 10. They're blessed with attacking talent. I think she should continue as the number one striker. And then when she does move and drop in, it confuses defenders. And then you've got someone like Blackstenius who's running in behind as well. It poses different threats, and it makes them more versatile in attack. The fact that they do have a player like that, and, you know, people are saying, oh, why did they send like Agyeman back out on loan? Because Agyeman still has certain traits to learn, you know, at that level. She's still very good in the box, but in terms of movement and link and play, this probably is a bit to go, and she's a good bit behind those two, probably. Yeah. In terms of the overall structure of the team,
one tournament does not make a player, unfortunately.
No, but it helped.
No, it definitely does. Yeah. So whenever I think about that, like, people having big tournaments and then just not quite living up to it, I always think of James Rodriguez.
Same, I was just going to say that.
I don't know why, he just always comes to mind. Yeah. As a player who had, like, an outstanding international tournament, and then poor lad just never came to fruition after that for him. Still hopefully that does not happen to Agyeman, because I have big hopes for her on the Arsenal side of things. Yeah. In the future. And I do think Brighton it's a good place for her. Like, we've seen that they are good at developing young talent, as much as they maybe can't either hold on to them or sustain it for themselves, I suppose.
Yeah, but again, like you say, they are good, and she's still playing with someone like Fran Kirby, who's done it and been there and is still producing, and it's a great person to learn from. You are moving away from the Arsenal people, but she's still surrounded by enough talent and enough experience to like glean a lot and learn a lot from those players there. So I do think it's the perfect place for her, because I don't think Brighton are going to be bottom of the table. So I think she'll be getting chances. She will be in a lot of games where there's transitions and stuff like that. So I think that I still think she'll do very well there. And it's still going to be a watch this space for her.
Well, speaking of Brighton, they had a loss against City 2-1. And for me, like, the most interesting thing of this game was probably Hasegawa in midfield, and just like the way she was able to, you know, run the ball, and that we haven't really seen properly from her as of yet. I know Jaglertz was talking about after the game wanting to make her more of a threat up front, but also not wanting to lose the impact that she does have in like the first and second third of the field.
Yeah, she's class, and maybe when Park was there, she maybe didn't get to roam as much. She had to be a little bit more disciplined. I think that they had great movement. I thought obviously Hemp was coming off the left again, which I think is her best position, and the link up for the goal, there was so many people involved. So Hasegawa and then Hemp and Fugino and Carolyn, they were all making runs. It was interplay. I think that it's the type of team now that should have a bit more fluidity, and I think that suits her. It is just going to be interesting to see if they can get someone to just sit and give her that freedom. It'd be lovely to be able to afford to give her a free role, but I think sometimes City in transitions, and I actually think Chelsea a little bit at the weekend, there was a little bit to be desired from their back line at times. And it's something that it's kind of, do you take, is risk versus reward there with who you put midfield?
I think it's something that we talked about last week whenever we were looking at who they signed during the summer transfer window. And it does feel like there was a couple of gaps in the team that maybe weren't properly addressed, or even just having that big name established person coming in who can have like an automatic presence in a team rather than needing that little bit of time to bed in and show themselves to be a player.
I mean, Benny, she was showing, you know, I know she was taken off, but she certainly was showing. She showed those glimpses, obviously, in the Euros. Now she's surrounded by probably more quality and stuff. She was very involved and very good at winning the ball back in dangerous positions. She has that energy. She has a bit of grit about her as well. So I think she's a very, very good signing for them, and will be very influential. But again, is Brown enough in centre mid to hold it? I mean, she's a young player to be putting that responsibility on her shoulders as the six, but it will be interesting to see how they get on. Plenty in attack, but we'll see. We will see.
Well, if you look at how Liverpool are getting on at the moment, you would argue that they were in a slightly better place than when they had Gareth Taylor.
Yeah, Liverpool. That's a very bad result against Leicester. For people who don't know, Leicester beat Liverpool. They were with 10 men from the 55th minute or something like that.
It was about half an hour, yeah.
Silly sending off. I mean, it was for dissent, really. No need. It was just free given up in the opposition corner. It wasn't like it was a clear-cut chance or there was much to be given out about. It was a definite free. So if you're the Leicester manager, you're really disappointed with that. But then, thankfully, your teammate pops up 3 minutes later, gives Leicester something to hang on to. And their credit, they didn't provide much to the game before. They went down to 10 men. But
that was, the goal was their only shot on target over the full 90 minutes.
And I think that shows where Leicester are at. But is it equally worrying that Liverpool couldn't get at a team with, you know, they're not as good quality? It's not like going Arsenal hanging on to a 1-0 lead, you know, which is difficult enough. It was Leicester doing it. And Liverpool have 74% possession. You know, they only had 9 shots. And like you're looking at other teams, like Man City had 19 shots against a decent Brighton team. And yeah, a little bit of worrying signs for Liverpool early on. In saying that, Leicester have a decent record against Liverpool. So I don't know, maybe it's just one of those bogey teams.
Yeah, maybe. But I think with the results from the first weekend and how comprehensive that was, it does put a little bit more of a question mark. And as you say, they have a decent record against Liverpool, but also against 10 men for like a large portion of the match. Like, it's not like that happened in the final 5-10 minutes. You know, half an hour is a long time to try and hold on for. Dominated the ball mostly, should have probably created more chances. I know, like, a lot of people automatically kind of went to, okay, this is going to be the relegation battle for the year. It feels a little bit early to be talking like that, but also I think because we're not seeing, you know, it's not like it was a necessarily outstanding performance or an outstandingly poor performance from Liverpool. It was just like they didn't know what they were doing, or a bit meh. And also you didn't know where that spark of creativity was going to come from in the team to kind of, I suppose, bring them back into the game with a bit of magic.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, the little bit of hope you had that Liverpool would kick on at some point. Like last year, we were disappointed with them and we thought, oh, maybe they'd come good this year. Obviously, lost players, but yeah, it doesn't look like there's going to be a kick. It doesn't look like enough investment was done. Obviously, there's going to be question marks now raised about the appointment of the manager and how late that happened.
They just don't have the squad.
They don't have the squad. And they missed their opportunity to build on that squad last summer, as opposed to this summer when they were on a bit of a slide from the previous season.
Yeah, like if you look at their team sheet from the weekend, including the players who started and then also the substitutes, like you would say that's a mid to low table team when everyone is performing at their best level. And it's very obvious that they're not doing that at the moment.
Yeah, like I saw definitely more from Brighton in their loss than I saw from Liverpool in their loss. Obviously, Brighton were playing against a better team, but there is more to be excited about. There's more, I don't know, there was more just energy and like go about them. And even like Villa, I know that they lost as well, but they contributed an awful lot to that game against Chelsea. They were on the front foot, they were forward thinking. And the first couple of games from Liverpool, I don't get the sense that they're going to go out and attack too many games because I don't think, like you said, I don't think they know what they're doing yet.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate for such a big club in the world scheme of things that hasn't happened over the last few years, that there hasn't been some sort of vision to create a little bit more, because it does feel like even if it starts to happen now, it's going back to a very different drawing board compared to where they were like 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, look, and we talk about backing and stuff, we say the same about Man United, but Man United, they invested enough to build enough quality that they, you know, use their name to good effect, you know, but they are pushing Champions League. They have been able to break in to that top four, and Liverpool had the chance a couple of seasons ago and didn't maintain it, obviously didn't attract enough and didn't retain the, like, obviously they're not going to retain Smith when you're getting £1 million offer from her, but
where's that £1 million
you have to then reinvest quick and go big. I think you go big, you take that whole pot and you go big on another player.
Yeah.
I think use your name, go to America, get a big name.
Yeah.
To come in, something like that. But I don't know. I don't know who's on the books there and who's doing the recruitment.
Yeah. And even if you didn't want that big name, like that's the sort of money that can make like a serious difference with a manager who knows how to recruit. Like we talked last week about Everton and what Brian Sorensen has done there, and they don't have a massive budget, yet he targeted very specific areas that he knew would be effective. And it's really worked for them. Or even you look at Leicester a couple of seasons ago, whenever they were battling relegation and they brought in the likes of Leipzig, and she made such an immediate difference and kept them up.
And they're still there, plugging away.
Exactly. So, I say I don't think it would take much. I don't think with the right support, it would take much to change things. Let's look at the professional WSL return of Sam Kerr in Chelsea's 3-1 victory over Aston Villa. Didn't take her long to get on the pitch. I think she saw in about 13 minutes when she scored like 634 days out of the game. That's like 20 months. So basically 2 years. Set a baby in that time with her partner, Christy Mewis. Definitely took life and decided that she was going to live it in the time she was out. But you have to say, for all the great ACL returns that there have been, this is probably up there with one of the ones that has gone better in terms of getting your 100th goal after such an absence from the league.
Yeah, and it was such a relief for her that, you know, I think Chelsea had the game at that point. She didn't have to come on, like I said, she didn't have to come on and change the game. It wasn't a vintage goal. She absolutely won't care, because that was the biggest reaction I've seen of a crowd or from teammates. And obviously Chelsea were away from home, but the reaction was huge for her. And obviously you can tell everyone is so happy to get her back. And it's just another cog in Chelsea's wheel that
I know I'm saying now it's great, it's brilliant and all that sort of crack, but I'm also like, it is also terrifying.
it is, but like, as much as it wasn't a vintage goal, it was her run across the defender to kind of almost get the header that causes the concern, like the confusion in the box, and Villa failed to clear her convincingly, which is unfortunate for them. But you know, she does pose that threat for someone who's small, and you know, you've got two very natural finishers there, two of the hardest things to find, you know, in the game, particularly the women's game. So to have not one but two at your disposal, and again, Beaver Jones, right place, right time, but she's always right place, right time, you know, in the box. So it's great that she's back. She's a brilliant character for the league. She brings a lot of attention to it. So again, that's all good things.
Yeah. You did say earlier though that you, at certain points, some of Chelsea's transitions that you weren't quite sure about what they were at, basically.
Yeah, I just felt like, obviously, Villa kind of, they did gift the first one. There was a bit of a mix up in the box to give Chelsea the early lead, but their build up for their equaliser goal, you know, it was patient, and you have to admire that. But Chelsea didn't apply like a really aggressive press, you know, either. So it was no less, I think, than Villa deserved that Salmon goal. And she had a second shot that Hampton had to make a really good save of. They looked a little bit rocked defensively, like they didn't expect Villa to come as front footed as they did. And Villa have some very good players, and only for that Walsh deflected goal that got Chelsea back into it. It could have been a different story. I thought Villa certainly contributed to this game in ways that we didn't see them do last year. Obviously that means nothing to them having not got a result, but you know, it wasn't.
But they are also playing really Chelsea dominated. Compared to, you know,
exactly,
the one more their level.
Chelsea had 18 shots, but Villa had 15. So, you know, the gulf isn't huge. Again, there was probably 5% deviation in possession, and yeah, Villa at home, but against Chelsea you're never going to dominate. So I think, obviously, we're nitpicking. They're 2 from 2, having beaten City as well. But yeah, not like overly convincing.
Yeah, but maybe I need to nitpick Chelsea.
But they weren't overly convincing last year. There are times, you know, they weren't overly convincing.
No, but that's the annoying thing about Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly.
They won't be overly convincing.
They'll be saying this at the end of the season, and they'll be 10 points clear with like 2 games to go.
Yeah, so arguably everyone else is not overly convincing when it comes to this. Okay, let's look at Manchester United, and arguably one of the biggest games coming up later on this week, with them facing against Arsenal. That one is at home for them, but is that going to be after a pretty big week for them in general? But got to be pretty happy with where you're at. Top of the league, as I said earlier, top goal scorer. something that you haven't really had in recent seasons, like one person who's knocking in goal after goal and could look to do it for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
Karen's like, I'm afraid to get excited
because there was one thing that I picked up on from the game was their defending of set pieces wasn't brilliant. Now, obviously, they won 5-1. It's not to be scoffed at. But there was three chances that London City Lionesses had, and obviously the United keeper was equal to them. A lot of them were straight at her, but she's obviously a very, very good goalkeeper as well. But, you know, it was a silly penalty that London City gave away early doors, which, you know, 3 minutes in. Again, these are the things. It's like Athlone's weekend. You gotta keep it tight for as long as possible, as early as possible. I'd like your opinion on Jade Riviere's goal. Was it a shot? Was it a cross?
I think it was a cross.
Yeah, it has to be a cross. And if it's not,
like,
crazy confidence.
Pretty certain. I mean, if she comes out during the week and says, no, I definitely intended it, then you know what? I'll let her live in that dream world. But watching it, I was like, there was no way that was intended to go in.
Yeah, and look, London City, they enjoyed spells as well, like they had done in the first week. But I suppose it is a little bit of a warning to their manager that if they don't maybe just bank up a little bit and try and be that gritty and annoying and you know, disciplined team, I don't think they have enough to just say, go out and express yourself against the top teams. They're going to have to start picking up points, and that might come from being a little bit sounder defensively. But yeah, United scored some good goals as well. Obviously, good to see Mallard scoring a couple of goals, because we did criticise her a little bit. She gets in good positions and then maybe snatches at things. But a really good header, which I think United could get a lot of joy from this year, because Sandberg and Riviere getting down those from the fullback position is really good. Really good to have a natural left footer down the left. So it gives them that other option. And I thought that Jess Park was brilliant. So
once again, I think she will be
a weird little swap deal. Again, I'm just going to reiterate, Clinton is class, but I'm not upset by this, because I think she is deadly.
I mean, it's the same thing that we said last week, and I still stand by it, that like, I think Jess Park is going to be a really important player for you guys, but also I just wish that they'd bought her straight out rather than like, if you had the option of Grace Clinton in there too, like, you'd be in a lot stronger position, I think, for the rest of the year.
This is going to be the thing that when we're making comparisons of how the teams catch up with Arsenal and Chelsea, these are the reference points that we'll come back to for Man United or Liverpool making any strides, and we'll say the same thing next year and the year after, and as long as the men's side of the house is what it is, this will be what the women's side of the house is, more than likely.
Yeah. Does it make you feel any better that similar issues are now taking down the European juggernaut that is Barcelona in terms of their squad?
No, nothing about that makes me feel good, because I actually love watching Barcelona play. It's a nice reprieve from the stress of the WSL, and getting to see them come to Europe and beat your rivals is generally quite nice. You know, I enjoy that.
Not Arsenal last season, though. Not Arsenal last time.
We'll see this year. No, it's never good when a big team isn't getting backed.
Well, especially considering, like, it's one thing with United. They haven't had like that big success yet, but like Barcelona have won everything.
Barcelona have, and it just shows how
unsteady things are, and like how quickly it can turn on you. Because I've actually been almost surprised over the last couple of seasons that it hasn't affected them more, because this has been going on for such a long time. Like, I remember writing articles about it whenever I was working in ESPN like 4 or 5 years ago. So the fact that it's only coming now is actually vaguely impressive that they've held off for so long. But hopefully it doesn't mean that we're losing one of the best teams in world football, because as you say, they are, while slightly devastating, a joy to watch as long as they're not playing against your team.
Rolfo made her debut for United, so there is a slight bit of joy I can take from Barcelona as financial woes, is that we did get Rolfo. And again, she's just another very good option. She's so strong, she's so tall. Just brings a depth to the athleticism of the team, which is good, because we can be light and a bit nice at times, whereas I think she has the directness to make an impact.
And then finally at the weekend, Everton's home debut at Goodison Park, not exactly what they would have hoped for. 2-0 loss to Spurs. But I suppose if you're to look at the positive side of that for Everton, like, amazing turnout. It was like three times the capacity of Walton Hall Park where they used to play. It seems that Everton have actually put quite a lot of work in over the last couple of months to make it feel like the women's home. You know, like, there's a new wrap around the stadium. There's different murals and stuff on your way to Goodison Park. There are still some hangovers from the men's side, but like, that's to be expected. It does
seem
like they
have
really tried.
That's also okay because you want to attract the people who were going there for years. You want those people to continue to go and make transition their support over a little bit and, you know, start getting behind an Everton team. Yeah, not a great result. It was kind of one of those games that it was mistakes made for the game, you know. The first Spurs goal, poor Everton press, but the ball was kind of ricocheting off people all the way up the pitch and Everton failed to clear across. Poor Ishikawa, she was kind of caught for both goals. And the second, but I guess we have to give a bit of praise for the second goal. Tanberg, wasn't it? Audacious effort from, I don't know, 60 yards to Chip Brosnan, came from really good press.
Unfortunate for Courtney that she was caught off her line like that. But
I mean,
the ball,
yeah, but you don't
dropped.
Expect your centre back is in possession of the ball. She gets closed down by England. You don't have time to react to that. It was a brilliant finish. I wouldn't blame Courtney in any way from that. And she had made a brilliant save from Spence in the first half as well. So Courtney picking up from where she left off, which is great to see. Just a pity for Everton that they couldn't follow up their brilliant performance from last week with a good home result again against the Spurs. They're the kind of games Everton would be targeting to be getting results from. So I think they'll be pretty disappointed with that.
Yeah, I think so, especially with the occasion of the day and, you know, like breaking a piece of history last weekend with the whatchamacallit hat trick against Liverpool. You know, you want to perform well in those moments, but it wasn't to be for them. But good sign for Spurs as well, because that's the sort of team that would have easily tripped them up last season or potentially later in the season when they go full Spurs again. Karen, thank you very much. Look forward to chatting to you next Monday after two Kathleen and Karen derbies. So we may actually not be talking to each other with Arsenal United and, of course, Piemont Sligo Rovers. That's at home for you guys, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Sligo beat us earlier in the season, so they've
picked up
some really good results recently. So, yeah, we're going to have to raise our game after a loss at the weekend. But, you know, again, we played kind of well, so it's positives to take. We just need to get that level of consistency and start building for next year.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will have Scarlett back next week to tell us a little bit about her journey with Hibs, which, as I said, two big matches coming up for them this weekend against Inter Milan and Celtic, and also to play referee between myself and Karen, depending on how the results go over the weekend. The Koi Gay Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. We will chat to you all next week.